copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
The topic for this focal talk is Know Your Context, how understanding mainstream media enables more effective discipleship and mission. That is what we call media awareness. It's a fact that media messages today shape our lives. We certainly live in a media-saturated, globalized world, or as someone has put it, in a glocal world. This affects individuals. You know, the time spent consuming media messages are increasing. It also affects the way we think about life. Ted Tournau, an ELF speaker, gives us this important insight. Popular culture gives us scripts or templates that model the way life is or should be. And that's really worth reflecting on that. Have we reflected on the way the media, or as it is called here, expressed here, popular culture, gives us scripts, gives us manuscripts that actually tells us a lot about what it means to be a human, what it means to be, live a life, what it means to not believe in God, for example. Or sometimes it's a fact that the only Christians we see are caricatures, stereotypes, crazy pastors, you know, whatever it is. It's not the real, you know, down-to-earth human people. It definitely affects families. The media-saturated world is it's an area where families grow up. And families have to navigate in this media scape. You know, someone called it not just a landscape, but a media scape. It's an air, you know, it's a terrain where we move. It's becoming more and more pervasive. Media also affects societies at large. You know, if the general news media, for example, really pushes an issue, put it on the agenda, then it really affects public debate, it affects politicians, it affects decision-making in society. So media reflects and influences society at so many levels. And let's reflect on this quote. Hollywood is not just a place, it is a world in itself. Hollywood has done something remarkable. It has created a great and very successful religion. Through its successful missionaries, the films produced in Oxford, in Hollywood, it has spread around the globe, gaining adherence from faster than any other religion in the world. If it has not attained the stature of a full-fledged religion, at least it's a very strong cult. That's a fascinating take on it, you know, that making movies is actually almost like a religious activity. And a number of sociologists point out that previously people went to church to have a religious experience. Many people today go to cinema to have a religious experience. That's fascinating, and one may ask why that is the case. Well, one dimension of that is the whole emotional experience. And you know, and it's a massive widescreen experience. And it's a community experience as well. So it's worth exploring the question, what does it mean that the focus of religion, at least functional religion, seems to have moved from the church to other places? So in view of this, there is a need for media awareness. That means to engage in media, to engage in media critique and in media literacy. And this is how this is expressed in the Cape Town Commitment that came out of the Cape Town Congress in 2010. We identify the following major needs, and the first need is that media awareness. And here it's how it is expressed. To help people develop a more critical awareness of the media messages they receive and of the worldview behind them. The media can be neutral and sometimes gospel-friendly, but media are also used for pornography, violence, and greed. We encourage pastors and churches to face these issues openly and to provide teaching and guidance for believers in resisting such pressures and temptations. So, how do we then engage and encounter media messages? Well, one way of looking at this is actually to walk through a five-step process. And this may in some way be very, seem complicated in the first place, but when you think about it, and hopefully when I've given it to you, you will see that it's not complicated at all. It's rather taking some of the dimensions that we already use and apply, and to think about it, reflect on it. The first question is the aesthetic dimension. We need to understand and appreciate the craft, the technology, the tools that are used, the narrative structures, the dramaturgical structures, whether that is news or it is fictional productions. I remember the first time this really, you know, came back to me or came home to me was when my wife did a master's thesis on analyzing an American teenage soap opera, Dawson's Creek. Some of you may remember that. It was a quality teenage soap. It's still being broadcast. And, you know, I actually had the opportunity of watching a number of episodes. I almost felt I was less important than the episodes at some point. So when we engaged in that together, I started to realize how well crafted it was, how much energy, time that was actually put into each and every episode. And I'm afraid we as Christians, we don't appreciate that. We don't appreciate the craftsmanship. We don't appreciate the art. So the aesthetic dimension is so important. Secondly, the emotional dimension. We really need to appreciate the emotional dimension of media messages. I don't know if you ever have gone or have been to the cinema, and afterwards someone asks you, "How was the film?" You know, and your immediate reaction is either good or bad. You know, depending on the feelings, on the emotions, maybe you feel sad, angry, happy, you know, because that is often how movies at least relate to us. I have to quote at least one Swedish person to you today, being Swedish originally. So the Swedish famous film movie director Ingmar Bergman, many of you may have heard of him, he said that the visual story communicates directly to our feelings, emotions. And it bypasses the intellect on its way. That's a very fascinating insight. It means that the way, you know, when we communicate through visual images, that is primarily communicating to our emotions. And it's first when we start talking about it that we start reflecting on it, and it sort of moves from the emotional to the rational. So we should never underestimate the emotional, our initial reactions. And often, you know, engaging in that is highly, highly rewarding, sharing the emotions and why we reacted as we did. Maybe we react to a certain scene or a certain plot or a certain character, whatever it is in a movie, because it connects with something in our own lives. And then as Christians, we need to respond with wisdom and grace and insight to relate, to build bridges to people the emotional should not be underemphasized. Thirdly, it's the story, the message that is there. In most media messages, there are at least traces of worldviews. They may not be consistent, they may not be all in a coherent whole, but still there are traces. It's something about what it means to be a human. Something about what is reality. Something about where should we put our trust. And I think it's our task then, if we engage in media on this, you know, more deeper level, actually to say, well, here are some patterns which we call worldviews. We have, for example, atheism or naturalism here. We have pantheism here. And we have theism here. What do we encounter in this movie, or in this soap opera, or in this news report even, or in this documentary? Does it fit any of these patterns? Is there a consistency there? At least traces there. And we need to help people to engage in this in a very meaningful way. Again, Ted Tournau. Popular culture is at its core religious. Being entertained by popular culture is, in a sense, participating in something religious. But such participation in popular culture must always be done critically and reflectively. Here is where the real battle begins. For popular culture's ease of access and enjoyment work against critical reflection. It's really, you know, another take on Ingmar Bergman's insight. This doesn't mean that popular culture is less valuable, but it's just we need to understand its limits and to respond correspondingly. And then in order to understand, you know, the worldview elements, we need to identify the worldview elements. What are they? We need to evaluate them, and we need to respond to them. So the aesthetic, the emotional, the intellectual. And then fourthly, the moral or the ethical. What are the ethical ideals embodied in this media message? What are the visions for human life? What is the vision for human life? What is the view of the true, the good, and the beautiful? Or what is the view of falsehood, of evil, and of ugliness? It's always, I think, important to try to get sort of insight in the try to step into the shoes of those who have actually produced a film or movie, or who are behind a documentary, and ask, what were their intentions? What did they want to achieve with this? Sometimes it's only for money, but very, very often it's much more than that. They actually, someone wants to get a message across. And we may disagree with it deeply, but if it's done in order to share something, you know, of a worldview dimension, we need to be appropriately engaging with that. And then we move to the fifth dimension, the spiritual or the theological or the normative, if you want to put it that way. We have sort of engaged with the aesthetic, asking about how it was made and why it was made in the way it was made. Engaged with our own emotional response and other people's emotional response. Asked about the worldview dimensions, the traces of worldview in the message. Asked about the vision of humanity, the vision of a human life that is embodied in it. And then, fifthly, what are the spiritual, theological implications of this? If we have the message, the worldview message of the media message that we're talking about, the media case example, and then put it alongside a biblical worldview, what are the implications? And our thoughts may be related to, for example, to, or we may think about Bible passages such as Philippians 4, everything that is true, you know, that is worthy, and so on. Let's affirm that. Or Romans 12, that we are asked to be discerning about what we engage with. So then, in view of that, what does this mean then in practice? Well, it means, I think, that we need to create arenas where we can actually practice whole life discipleship, where we can help younger and older Christians and others who are interested to engage in this. And this is actually an area where we have done have quite a lot of experience from back home in Norway. And this is really rewarding. To take, for example, a movie, have a movie night, for example, and to start exploring together, if it's in a youth context in a church, or if it's in a family context, or even among friends, to ask, what does this mean in terms of the whole, the Christian view of reality? No single piece is hermetically sealed off. Christ is the Lord of all. As individuals, when we are consuming, when we are engaging with media messages, how can we integrate discipleship in that context? How can we practice discipleship? In the family context, how can Christian parents grow children that are aware and critical in the positive sense of the word? How can churches do that? In terms of families, look at this from the Barna Group, which is a research institution in US. Most parents and teens have not heard any kind of teaching in a church, in a religious setting or public forum like a school, about how families can best use media, entertainment, or technology. In other words, most families are not getting any coaching or any assistance when it comes to integrating technology into their family life. And this seems to be a fact. It seems to be a fact globally. Media awareness and media critique, a forgotten dimension of mission. So we need to encourage churches, we need to equip churches to engage media, not just at a superficial level, but then in a level, you know, appreciative of the quality that is there, appreciative of the artistic, the technological achievements, engaging at the worldview level, at the spiritual and moral, theological levels. In terms of mission, I don't know how many examples I've heard, you know, people have been in touch with me through the Lausanne global context that I'm part of, sharing, no one is doing anything about this. Media messages are overwhelming us, they say. Where technology goes, media goes. Where media goes, media messages comes, and where they come, a plurality of perspectives come. And often, people are not being prepared. We need to be involved in missional engagement with media. We need to understand the context, which really means media awareness. We need to know the language that is media literacy, the language of the media. And we need to engage with the stories that we encounter in terms of media critique. This is, I would claim, a forgotten dimension of mission. And it's time that we wake up to the urgent need to produce resources, to equip Christians, to equip pastors, youth workers, missionaries, whatever role we have. We all have a role to play. To equip for engaging with media in all its variety. It's a wonderful world, but it's also a dangerous world. It's a world full of beauty and of ugliness. It's a world full of truth and error. Have you discovered this global mission field? Have you reflected on what you can do in terms of making a difference for young people, for the emerging generation, in order to equip them for mission in a media-saturated world? Well, that was sharing with you some of the things that are on my heart when it comes to this. I think there is really as many possibilities as there are individuals, as there are Christians, because it's a, you know, it's an every member ministry. It's an every Christian has a potential media ministry. For example, we often underestimate the influence it is in when if we respond to mainstream media, you know, by email or on blogs or, you know, on where they open up for interaction. I remember some years ago I heard that if a program receives 10 negative reviews, for example, I mean, individual, that doesn't seem to be generated from the same source, that is serious business for them. At least that was in Norway. I don't know if they're oversensitive in Norway, but still, you know, it's a matter of using the opportunities. That's one way of, we haven't done that really. I mean,
just taking action.
That's right, and responding. Yeah, that's one example. Responding. Yeah, so I think, you know, so many times we get frustrated if something, we encounter a news story, for example. Why don't we respond then? Today is a day of interactive media, you know, responding. As one example that we can do as individuals. Another dimension is that we shouldn't underestimate the different generations here. I appreciate what you said about your own generation. But I think it's a fact that, for example, in UK, I know that statistics say that the age group that has the largest increase in movie attendance is early retirement age. Isn't that interesting? One of the reasons for that being loneliness. So, and that's also one of the age groups in UK, at least I saw the statistics, that is falling now away from Christian faith. Becoming secularized. So, are there some connections here? You know, are we able to connect with the increasing number of people in early retirement age? Let's say, you know, depending on countries and individual circumstances, but between 60 and 75, for example. That's an immensely important age. And so it's not just about youth work. It's about the whole age span of generations, I think. But of course, this relates to so many different arenas. This relates to the media presence arena, you know. We talked about the media awareness. But when it comes to media ministries, being creative, using new approaches. We heard, Henrik, about JesusNet. I think your colleague left just and she mentioned a couple of examples. And we need that kind of innovative approach. There is a place for everyone. You know, the media world is so big that there is not just one opportunity and one approach. We need each other, you know, in the body of Christ. So, yeah. Yes.
Do you have any thoughts on what a church can do for its web presence to be a missional web presence?
Mm. Well, I think at least there are at least two or three levels to this. One is to use the website as a community building, website for the church members and maybe the immediate contacts, families, relationships around that. Maybe that's the most effective use in many cases, to help equip the Christians to relate to others. Some Christian websites, church websites, have succeeded in drawing attraction beyond that. Maybe because they relate to everyday affairs. Maybe because they sharing life stories, being open about who they are. Maybe that's often combined with events, for example. There's a public event of some kind, whether it's a debate, if it's a musical event, a festival kind of thing, or a social engagement thing, doing something for someone who needs help in some area. There are so many different dimensions, but I think connecting creatively and proactively with what's happening in the church, and then maybe through Facebook, through Twitter, through Instagram and so on, to draw that, if each and every member of the church then draw the attention of their friends to the website. Because that is often, the problem, that it becomes so fragmented. It's not like I told earlier about the old Norwegian experience of one channel, everyone is there. That's not where we are. It's so many different media dimensions, media worlds alongside. So I think that's probably one of the challenges for a church website, is that it too easily becomes inward looking. There's a lot of wisdom in that, I think, to think about the website as the place where you can actually engage and draw people's attention. But I do think it needs the united effort of the church as a church, as a community. It's impossible just for two or three people to do it. It really needs to be something that is talked about within the church context, encouraging people to refer to the church website, to actually naturally include it in the the Facebook profile or wherever one is in terms of the social media. It's like, social media, like especially Facebook, is a place where we share everyday things. Most people do that. So if we then also naturally share when we go to church, well, then our friends don't find that a strange thing. Or I suppose most people find that a strange thing. But they then respect the relationship with us. So that's a relationship building thing. So through friendships, through real authentic friendships, I think it's the huge possibilities through social media to build on that, to draw people in. Some people, though, would never come to a church, but would get in touch with the credible Christian media ministries of different kinds. So there is a need for so many different things. That's, I think, my point here. We need to, just not one thing, but a number of things that complement each other. We are the body of Christ. We need each other. So it's not just one fix. It's different things in different contexts.